Welcome to the Women's Fitness and Health Revolution podcast. There is so much noise on the interweb these days about what women should and shouldn't be doing when it comes to their fitness and health. Not only is it all too often tied to shame and fixing our bodies, it can also be incredibly detrimental to our health and wellness overall. The Women's Fitness and Health Revolution podcast sorts through the BS and offers advice and actionable, tactile steps to support and build a better relationship to your amazing body through every stage of womanhood. It aims to break the cycle of keeping women in the dark about their extraordinary machines and revolutionize the way we move, eat, and live so that our daughters and our daughters' daughters look in the mirror and feel exactly what they are: fierce, beautiful, and capable of everything. The revolution starts here. Hello, 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 and welcome to the Women's Fitness and Health Revolution podcast. That was weird. Hi, I'm your host, Kinsey. I don't know if I should be introducing myself like that every time. TBH, that is a part of podcasting that is hard for my brain, and I am sidetracking already, so we are off to a strong start. Okay, well, if you don't know, now you know. I am your host, Kinsey. And today, I am, as always, all sorts of excited to be answering some of your questions in our first ever questions episode. And hopefully first of many, because this was so fun. So please keep the questions coming. I put a question box on the ye olde Instagram last week asking for any fitness, nutrition, health-related questions you may have. P.S. If you just counted how many times I say questions, please let me know. Anyway, I was completely humbled and thrilled by your responses. So big thank you right off the bat to everyone who responded with a cue. And P.S. If you have your own questions on all things health, fitness, overall women's wellness, I would love to hear from you. So please feel free to drop me a DM on Insta at kinsey.does.the.fitness or shoot me an email at kinsey@raiderfitacademy.com, and I'll put that in the show notes as well. But before we dive in, a quick life update, because speaking of women's health and fitness, I got my first mammogram this week, and y'all, I don't know if you've had a mammogram, but can we just agree that they need to figure out women's health a little bit more than just smashing our boobs? I shared with a yoga class a couple months ago that I was doing this and that I was nervous because I heard that they smash your boob tiny small like a pancake. And one of the women said that they don't do that anymore. I think there's like a 2D and a 3D. Honestly, I haven't done a lot of research on this. I just did the one that my insurance did. And do men do this? Do they have to like smash their testicles? I just feel like this is a ladies only special thing. So the good news is we're all clear. I should have had the paper near me because I have something lump, like lots of lump in the breast tissue area, but apparently it's very common. I'm just seeing if I have it nearby. Oh, I do. Okay. I'm going to screw this name up. It's called fibroadenomas. And apparently it's just a super common thing that a lot of women have, but, and this is going to blow your mind, like so many things with women's health, I had never heard of it. So of course I freaked out when I found it there, but good news, it is just that. So that's not to say if you find a lump in your breast, please go get it checked out. And my fingers are crossed for you that that is what it is. But yeah, that's a thing. And now I know that mammograms still smash your boobs. So if your insurance provides it, do the 3D. And also, please, if you have breasts, give yourself those exams because they are so, so important. Our health is so important. And sometimes we really just have to go to the bat and advocate for ourselves. But like I said, it's a women's health and fitness podcast. So I figured I'd fill you in on that. And if you want to learn more about fibroadenomas, did I say that right? Let me know and I can do a little deep dive research and fill you in more. Okay, onwards and upwards to your questions. And I'm going to answer three questions today. First, how do I train with an injury and get stronger? Second, How do I get back on the wagon after a long break due to travel or sickness or just life? And three, I just lost a lot of weight. What kind of exercise should I be doing? Not surprising. I love these questions, especially because I think a lot of folks out there can relate to one or three of these. One of the things that I have seen the most over the last 10 years of training are various shades of folks returning to exercise after months, years, or decades of being away. And right away, I want to say, it's important to remember that it is really never too late to get back into fitness or taking care of your health. And as always, this is a lifelong journey. You will always, always, always benefit from choosing to show up for yourself. And your life can change at any moment, I promise you. So if you're sitting out there listening, first of all, thank you for listening. But you're thinking to yourself, well, this is going to be great for them, but I miss my shot at getting started. Or it's just been too long. What's the point? Or I'm too old. Or it's just not for me. Or literally anything else. I want you to do me a favor and give that limiting belief a big old hug for trying to help and keep you safe. And then send it packing and listen up. And P.S., if you are interested in a podcast about limiting beliefs or like a few podcasts, because it is a big topic, please let me know. That is something that I am gone through a lot with my own life, working on with clients, that I continue to find new layers of in every area of my life and others. So lots of insight there if you have interest in that. Also happy to bring on someone to talk about it with me. There's just, I think that's such a huge, huge piece of wellness is getting to know and break through limiting beliefs. So let's hit it, shall we? Our first question on the Instagram was from the beautiful Inaspirational, and she asks, how do I train with an injury and get stronger? And I love this question. First things first, big reminder that everything I offer on this pod is for information only and is never to be used in lieu of medical advice. I don't know anyone's exact circumstances. This is just for general information that you can add into your toolbox and bring to your trainer or your provider. So first things first, I love this because yes, a lot of times we can absolutely still keep training with injuries. And of course, it's a total base-by-base situation. And I hope it goes without saying that there are definitely circumstances where it can be important to wait to start training. And that's great too. Our body needs what it needs and we get to show up for it. And all of it is wonderful. Before resuming any sort of physical activity, please always make sure to get cleared by your physician. And I would go a step further and ask them for advice on what actually is what you're cleared to do and what you still need to avoid. Catch me another time about a postpartum horror story where just not enough information was given. Point is, first step, and I go through this with my own clients all the time, even if they don't have injuries that I know of or injuries that happened 10 years ago, is that I ask them if they're cleared for movement. So make sure you're cleared for movement. And I always personally will follow up with that same question of, are you cleared for all movement? Were there things you were told to avoid? And it's good information too as a trainer just to know, and as a person working, especially once you're past the injury, of what muscles might need a little extra attention because they may have atrophied a little bit during that recovery period. And by the by, if you are cleared, I do hugely recommend continuing your training. Maintaining lean muscle mass is so vital to so much of our overall health and to the recovery of your body because it is an anti-inflammatory overall response. And unfortunately, the older we get, the quicker our muscle mass, bone density, and overall strength and power diminish based on inactivity. So doing something is always going to be better than doing nothing, unless, of course, you're in a circumstance where you were told not to do the thing. When you are choosing exercises, you'll want to make sure, and again, this might go without saying, but I'm going to throw it out there, that you're choosing exercises that do not aggravate the recovering part of your body. Your body's safety is always a first priority. Remember, pain is not normal, and especially when you're recovering, be gentle. Because the answer, when it gets to specifics, is so dependent on, oops, I knocked my water over, I'm back, over on individual circumstance, I'm going to start with just sweeping generalizations. So right off the bat, I'm going to say it's hugely beneficial to book yourself a couple sessions with a personal trainer or a physical therapist, at least a few sessions, so they can find exercises that work specifically within your parameters and help you nail form so that you can avoid further injury. Another cool sweeping generalization is if you don't feel pain while you're doing it and you injure one side of your body, like an elbow joint or a knee, etc., you can still train the other side of your body, which at first blush might feel wrong, right? Like you don't want one side to be super jacked and then the other to be like, eh. Although maybe you do. I don't know what your preferences are. But point is, sit down if you're not already, because this is pretty cool. There have been multiple studies that have shown that because resistance training is a neuromuscular adaptation, meaning that we're training the connection between our muscles, brain, and the rest of our nervous system, cross-education can occur, which means when we train one side of our body during an injury, it not only helps to maintain the muscle in our inactive side, it can even, some studies have shown, increase strength in our injured side. Why are our bodies so cool? This is huge. Remember how I said that the worst part of injury is the quickening loss of muscle mass? Why not use our brain to keep it strong? And we do that by, if safely and doc says okay, training one side of our body. And like I said, again, I cannot stress it enough, before you get started, get cleared by your doc and then find exercises that don't put your recovering body part in harm's way. Next general tip is machines can be great options, especially if you're dealing with limb injuries because you're seated and you don't have to worry about stabilizing. Dumbbells too are wonderful, especially again, if you can perform them seated and not have to factor balance into the equation, because if we're injured, we don't want to fall over and have to catch ourselves with the broken body. So the last tip I think that I'm giving on this is making sure that you're staying present in your body. If something feels wrong or potentially dangerous, just don't mess with it. It's just not worth it. Either find a trainer who can help you figure out if you're doing it right, or just skip it and find another move that doesn't feel so precarious. Like I tell all my clients, I've got 150 moves for every single body part, probably more at this point. I realize I'm saying like a million times, so that's the thing today. Enjoy it while it lasts. Specific examples are wildly dependent on where we're injured. But for funsies, I would like to share with you a case study from a previous client I had who was a gent who went through a rather intensive surgery done on his ankle. He got a bone graft within his ankle, and I actually got to see the surgery on Facebook. They Facebook lived it because it's a more unusual surgery, so they were filming it for educational purposes, and it is so cool. But his story in itself is pretty wild, from how the injury started, which, spoiler, it got broken in a mosh pit, so that's rock and roll, to getting gaslit by LA surgeons. Yeah, that happens to men too. To finally finding a doc that would perform the actual surgery he needed. And although he lived in LA at the time, this doctor, the one doctor he found who would do this for him, was in Alabama. And P.S., shout out to Doc Kenny Bramlett for calling the LA docs out on their unwillingness to treat the ankle with, yes, a more invasive, but far more statistically successful procedure, considering that the option the LA docs were offering had a 30% chance of success versus 85 to 90%. American healthcare. Don't even get me started. That's a whole other thing. And then finally, his recovery, which he did right, y'all. He was all in all off his foot completely for 6 weeks and in a boot for 8 weeks. Spoiler, he is fully recovered and just PR'd a couple of months ago with a 400, that's 400 pound deadlift. So good news, injuries don't mean the end of our fitness careers. In fact, you can come back even stronger if you do it the right way. Because he was in full healing mode, like I said, his ankle got cut open. He had a piece of one ankle bone grafted into another piece of the ankle bone. It was very intense. His doc recommended not rocking his leg, so we didn't do the single unilateral leg exercises for pretty much those first 14 weeks. He was cleared, however, because again, I go off doctor recommendations. They know bodies better than me. He did recommend after a couple weeks in that he started gentle biking with his boot on a stationary bike. He wasn't out balancing on the road. We went and did stationary biking. Obviously, this isn't ideal for max strength, but it was amazing because compared to the nothing he would have been doing otherwise, he was able to maintain a level of resistance so that he didn't completely lose muscle mass. And because the injury was in the ankle and didn't affect his hips or low back, we were able to strength train upper body and core strength. So we ended up doing, along with the bike, a mix of machines, dumbbells, and bodyweight exercises. By the time his boot was off 14 weeks later, there was some muscle loss in his legs, particularly in the booted leg, because he wasn't able to put a lot of weight on it while he walked, but not nearly as much had he stopped moving altogether. And he still had, and this is a big one, he still had the habit carved out of going to the gym. So I would put my money on the hardest thing about taking time away from a healthy habit is then mustering the willpower to make time for it again. Even if you are doing what you consider to be the bare minimum with exercise while you're injured, the most important part in my mind truly is that you are keeping the habit of showing up for your workout so that when you're in on the other side and recovered, you've got that routine down. You don't have to try to re-cement that routine on top of rebuilding strength in a particular part of your body. So this guy is my hero, and I have had a handful of amazing clients coming back from injury, but this, like I said, was the longest and most intense recovery. And if he got through it, and boy, did he ever, 400-pound deadlift, my hero, you can too. So quick recap, got an injury but want to keep training? One, check with your doctor. Two, find exercises that don't aggravate your injury. Three, it's great to train the opposite side of your body if it's safe to do. Four, let showing up be enough. Maybe right now is not the time to build tons of strength. Remember, we don't have to constantly be chasing strength PRs. Give your body time, energy, and food-based nourishment to heal, aka a whole lot of amino acid-rich proteins, creatine, and anti-inflammatory foods. And five, you got this. Injuries, while they are a pain in the butt physically, they are almost more so a pain in the butt mentally. So give yourself time, be patient, you got this. Next question is from my baddie client, Oddball, asking, wow, I never read that out loud, and that is the cutest name. You guys, phonetics, am I right? Asking, how do you get back on the wagon after a long break due to travel or sickness or just life? TBH, all these questions could easily be their own podcast, and eventually I'll probably circle back for longer responses. But speaking generally, thank you for your question. This is amazing. I'm sure a handful or a lot are going to roll your eyeballs at me, and that's fine, because the answer I'm about to give is one that I've seen play out in real time hundreds of times over, so I'm confident. The soft skill answer here, and the one that is truly the most important at the end of the day, is that it comes down to mindset. Remember, the question is, how do I get back on the quote-unquote wagon? And don't worry, I'll give you a couple more practical tips too, but hear me out first, because like I said, make or break. The first three phrases that sprang to mind for me here when I read this question were, something is good enough, this is a lifelong journey, and this one's a little longer, but it's going to cap into one, I'm not picking up where I left off, and that's great. I am still further along than when I first got started. The biggest mistakes I see with people trying to get back into fitness after quote unquote falling off the wagon are trying to do everything all at once, thinking that they have to do it all perfectly or what's the point, and expecting themselves to be or constantly comparing themselves to where they were before they took the time off. Do me and yourself, more importantly, a favor and lower your barrier to entry. Make your goal at first as simple as it can be. Just get started, baby. Plan for 2 to 3 days per week for at least 30 minutes. And I mean seriously plan it. Like, find the time, add it to your calendar, and stick to it like it's a doctor's appointment, because as I always say, it is just as important. And I talk about this all the time too, but a surefire way to fall off a goal is by taking on too much. For the first month or so, just prioritize making time and showing up. The big strength, body comp, or race goals can come after showing up to working out is a no-brainer. Then, practice being okay missing a workout. Yeah, ideally we show up to the times we booked for ourselves, but life will inevitably happen. And that's another plus side of starting with those 2 to 3 workouts per week versus like 4 to 6, right? Because there are plenty of other days if we miss one of our workouts to catch up on our workouts. Notice also what is coming up when you do miss a workout. Are you judging yourself? Are you ashamed? Are you being hard on yourself? Are you making a decision that it's just too much to get started right now and you'll do it later when things calm down? What is going on in your mind? Remember, and I've said this before, but we can find an infinite amount of reasons not to start something when it feels uncomfortable. And this is no judgment. It's a human thing. We all do it in one regard or another. So understanding what is coming up in those moments, that's how we can start to slowly rewire the way we're thinking about showing up so that we can start to be more effective, or just be aware of those thoughts so we can sort of talk ourselves around or have tools for the hurdle. Again, this comes to sort of that limiting belief work. And if you want a deep dive, let me know. But episode 9 of this here podcast talks all about using the ad system to get back on track with our goals. And I'm going to drop that link in the show notes because it's a great place to start. Because remember, fitness is a everyone lifelong journey. Very good. At the end of the day, in the beginning here, showing up is literally all that matters to me. Showing up consistently. And the last little thing I'll say, because I hear it all the time. No, we aren't, unfortunately, going to be in the same place we were when we worked out last, or when we were in high school, or before we had kids. And that is absolutely fine. For 2 of those things, your body is wildly in a different place hormonally and physiologically. And making it a goal to be like you were in your teens or pre-baby is a great place to pause and pick a realistically supportive goal. And this is not me saying, throw in your dreams, we've tapped out. It doesn't mean you can't feel amazing in your body or love the way you look when you strip your clothes off, or even chase wild body comp goals that will blow people's minds, which you'll probably want to find another podcast for, because I don't do bikini models and all that fun stuff, but there are tons of other great podcasts out there for you, and it is totally doable pretty much at any phase of your life. So you don't have to limit yourself. It just means our hormones are night and day different. So there are some things that won't be the same, and that's wonderful. Training and nutrition are going to look a little different. And yeah, we might not fit into the jeans we wore when we were 18 and hadn't fully filled out into our full-grown woman's body. I love being a woman. I like my shape. It's cool to be a grown-ass human. Sorry, I try not to swear on this podcast. Anywho, we get to start rewriting the way that we think the way that we define value around our bodies. And that goes for everyone. That's been a big part of my journey, and it's a really beautiful part of the journey. And to my friends who are feeling beat down by not being as strong or as fast or what have you as they were before they took their break from fitness, I offer you a gentle trip down memory lane to think of all the work you had to put in to get to those personal bests. And I know, because again, I've had this conversation, that a lot of the responses will be, well, that's the problem. I don't want to go through all that work again. And sister, I hear you. Sometimes I think about the weight I was pushing in CrossFit and I get a little misty-eyed. But at least at this point in my life today, that style of training, just thinking about it makes me want to curl up into a ball and sleep for like 17 days straight. And zero shade on CrossFit. I loved it when I did it. I loved the community. I still love my friends in CrossFit. But personally, my nervous system is in a slightly different place these days. And I am happy finding new, albeit slightly slower and more sustainable for me, ways to continue growing my strength. The point is, if you look back and think, but that was really hard and I do not want to go through that again, don't. And that's fabulous. There are so many amazing different fitness goals. And if your body is saying, nah, why not listen? A great way to not compare yourself to the the you of the past is to set new goals. Or if the goals are the same and they are still realistic, and here comes the mindset piece, rather at looking at the distance between here and how far you have to go, be inspired by the fact that you have already gotten there in the past and work on enjoying the journey. Okay, so I'm going to step away from mindset, but if you want to know more, check out episode 11 of this podcast, The Two Hacks to Stay Consistent with Fitness, where we do a bit of a deep dive, as I'm wont to do, and I'm going to go ahead and drop that link in the show notes, Tumbian. In terms of practical, I promised you, I already gave you my fave, which was schedule your workouts and stick to them, and I have a whole episode on that because it is my favorite and the most effective in my mind. On episode 13 of this pod, and I'm putting that in the show notes also. But other tips and tricks for staying consistent in the beginning as you get back into fitness. The first one is hire a personal trainer or a group fitness, or join a group fitness class. The phrase, when we pay attention, or when we pay attention, is accurate, y'all. If you're too scared to spend money or are a little tight, and I say that with absolute love and understanding and total empathy, one, you are worthy of investment. Two, you don't have to do it forever. This can literally just be like a month or two while you're kickstarting yourself. And three, there are free resources on things like YouTube, but I have found personally that I have trouble motivating myself without the monetary boost and the outside accountability, especially when my cash has been tight in the past. Because if I'm spending money and I don't have a lot of money to spend, I am way more likely to make the most out of my investment. Also, for my money, side note, for my money has weirdly been my go-to phrase lately, and I have no idea why, but I'm like not super mad at it. It's just weird. Anyway, for my money, PT is the gold standard if you're investing. Not only do you get the accountability to show up to your workouts are specifically programmed for you and you get adjustments and education about your form so that you have just a full toolbox to take on your own to know going forward what to feel, how to train, and how to keep yourself safe. And I do take a small amount of online clients still. So if you're ever interested in learning more about working together or getting an application for working one-on-one, please hit me up at kinzie@raiderfitacademy.com. Tell me a little bit about yourself and your goals, and we can start the process of seeing if we're a good fit. So next up for accountability or getting started, a lot of times, this kind of goes with the last one, but a little bit if you're, again, not looking to spend money right now, a lot of times local community centers will offer classes at a pretty affordable price. They aren't always as consistent, but it can be a helpful start. I know in St. Paul, where we live right now, they do a lot of low cost or even donation based classes in the park weekly. I mean, it's Minnesota, so that's not happening in the winter, at least not the classes I'm taking, but if you get started in spring and summer, fantastic. Obviously, if it's just a week-to-week class, this isn't going to be what gets you jacked, but it is a great way to do what I was talking about before, which is normalizing your fitness routine. And bonus, it gets you into spaces with people who are on similar journeys as you, working on and prioritizing their health and fitness, which brings me to the third hack, which is find a workout buddy. Maybe a friend or a coworker, family member, maybe a partner. Honestly, I've seen partner go both ways, so proceed with caution. Either you and your buddy can work out together, or if it doesn't feel feasible to meet up every day, or not every day, we don't want to work out every day, but meet up for your workouts, use each other for accountability check-ins. So maybe you join a program together and then plan the days you're going to work out. Once you complete your workout, shoot them a text or call or follow up with each other on an app. It is weirdly amazing how much difference it makes when we know we have to report to someone about finishing our workouts. And this next one, feel free to roll your eyes, but again, it works. Stickers. Hear me out. Make a calendar, buy some stickers, and every day you work out, give yourself a sticker. Hit House LA, the gym that I owned in LA, would run quarterly fitness challenges, and folks who would show up like once or twice a month prior to these fitness challenges were in the gym killing it like 2 to 4 times a week just to get their stickers. So do not underestimate the dopamine hit of earning a reward, especially if it's got sparkles. Other reward-based hacks could be things like every month you complete 12 workouts, you get to buy a new pair of leggings, or Pay a friend $20 on Venmo each week, and for every workout you miss, they get to keep $10. So this one I actually stole from a client when I worked at Hit House. It was brilliant and makes me laugh to think of it this day. He had a really hard time getting himself to class on the days that he would book. And his hack was at the beginning of each week, his goal was 3 classes a week. At the beginning of each week, he would send Venmo his friend $150. And then at the end of each class, he'd text his friend that he went to class. And at the end of the week, he missed one of his classes. His friend got to keep $50 per class. So he would lose $50 for every class he missed. That's a pretty high roller. You could do it with $2, with $10, or do it with 50 and feel more motivated. The point is there are all sorts of fun things to explore. Get a little weird. Why not? And the last one is use social media. Yeah, this option isn't for everyone, but it is super helpful for some. You can create a private account dedicated to your fitness journey where you just invite people who you care about, or maybe you don't even invite anyone and it just helps to have sort of like a record you can go to. Or maybe you post about it on your stories. But what I found in the past, and just for the stories, for people who are less familiar with Instagram, if you're uncomfortable about posting on your stories for like the general public, you can do options where you post your stories for just close friends. So strange interweb people don't have to see it, but the people in your circle can. I have found in the past that for certain personality types, like me, when I was training for my half marathon, it is a very motivating thing to share on social. Listen, I know there are plenty of you out there who can bang out 10 miles and not tell a soul about it. But if I'm going to run, period, personally, I need that mix of celebrating, a little bit of humble bragging, and some positive reinforcement. And I'm not even mad about it. It works for me and it makes me happy. I have had clients in the past who have also found it very helpful too. And the cool part is you never know who you're going to inspire when they see you taking care of yourself. It has a ripple effect in ways we can't even imagine. Again, that's just one idea. So if you heard that and your skin crawled, great, don't do that one. Find what motivates you and how can you finagle that into helping motivate you to work out. The important footnote here is to keep the motivation positive. If health is a lifelong journey, have you heard that one? We must move away from punishing and shaming ourselves. You're just too dang precious. So that's my answer for today. Work on mindset and just start showing up and seeing what works and changing it when it doesn't. And if you want more resources, I've done a couple other podcasts. I'll throw in the show notes. Episode 3 about how to crush your goals, and episode 14, 6 things I wish I knew before I started working out. And this brings us to our final question from Anonymous. And again, another absolute banger. She states, I just lost a lot of weight. What kind of exercise should I be doing? The answer, my friends, is 100% unequivocally strength training. And I'll caveat in a second and talk about a little bit what I told her in her direct case, but this is the absolute goal to get to. When we lose weight, even if we need to, we lose muscle when we lose weight. If we lose weight without the aid of exercise, we lose even more muscle. And if we lose weight without exercise and without ideal levels of protein, you guessed it, we lose even more muscle. I've talked a lot about the benefits of muscle, especially as it pertains to weight loss, but especially as it pertains to aging and just overall health. So I'm gonna sort of fast track it here and talk about a study that I heard recently. Donald K. Lehman, PhD, professor of food science and human nutrition at the University of Illinois, was on a podcast recently. It was the Dr. Gabrielle Lyon podcast, speaking about the truth about protein timing and aging. It is another total banger, so I'm going to copy that into the show notes as well for you to check out, because hot dog, it was wall-to-wall good info. In their interview, he cited a 4-month research study he led with, I think it was 120 women, ages 35 to 65, with the median age mid to late 40s, essentially to get to the bottom of why weight loss is so temporary with yo-yo dieting and how to prevent that. So just a quick before I dive in, yo-yo dieting, if you're not familiar with the term or just to brush up, it's when you sort of hop from one diet to the next, or maybe you lose a ton of weight with one thing and then you gain it all back and you try another thing and you gain it all back. Pretty much it's what has been sold to women for the last several decades and why so many of us are having so many health issues down the road. And the biggest, there's a laundry list of reasons yo-yo dieting deserves to get slapped in the face and buried deep. But one of the big reasons is that a lot of times chronic yo-yo dieters, they'll lose huge amounts of weight and then gain it back, and then lose huge amounts of weight and then gain it back. And when they're losing huge amounts of weight, especially because they're not oftentimes including exercise, and even when they do, they are losing tons of muscle mass. So when we start to regain the weight, it comes on much easier. We have a tendency to feel sicker. We hold the weight a lot longer. So remember, every time we lose lean muscle mass, we're essentially taking away one of the most powerful tools in our body. Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, the one whose podcast this was on, talks about muscle as the organ of longevity. But the point is, yo-yo dieting not only does a huge number on our nervous system, our metabolism, our self-esteem, we blame ourselves, it destroys our muscle. So they were exploring getting to the root cause of exactly why that was. Going in, at least in how he spoke about it during the interview, it seemed pretty apparent that the team was expecting, based on how much previous research there's been done on the issue, that loss of lean muscle was what was causing that weight, the boomerang effect of losing weight, gaining weight. But that was the premise they built it around. And they broke the women into four groups. One, the first one, was a group that ate based on the food pyramid recommended diet. So food pyramid is what we're all taught in schools and are in our nutrition programs, and it's what the government says is good for our body. And what that looks like is super high carb and super low protein and fat. So that was that. And they were on the food pyramid recommendation diet. They were at a 500 calorie deficit and they did no exercise. Group two was food pyramid recommendation based. So that low protein, high carb, again, with that 500 calorie deficit. This time they added exercise. So they had 5 days of 30 minutes of walking plus 2 days of resistance training. The third group was high protein, lower carbs, not no carbs, PS. Again, 500 calorie deficit, no exercise. And the fourth group was high protein, lower carbs, 500 calorie deficit. Then with the added exercise of 5 days of 30 minutes of walking and 2 days of resistance training. The findings are kind of bananas, although not that bananas, if you understand the importance of maintaining lean muscle mass and why I, without batting an eye, recommend strength training, period. But after 4 months, the results were the food pyramid group, who didn't have exercise involved, they lost weight. So they, on average, lost about 14 pounds after 4 months, which is significant because they were restricting by 500 calories. But body comp wise, 35% of that weight loss was lean tissue. And the way he put it was that they essentially aged that group. They essentially sent them into sarcopenia, which is loss of muscle mass. So that group aged after just 4 months of eating that government recommended diet of high carb, low protein. And on top of that, the longer they fed that food pyramid diet to those participants, the worse their metabolism got. Y'all, this is government recommended. This is the way they say we should be eating. There is another day and a better expert we can talk to about the politics that go into the creation of that BS food pyramid. But for today, please take this away. This is only one of many, many studies that blow that biatch wide open. Then, so these are the 4 months for, sorry, I got a little carried away, but come on, you guys, come on. The second group they fed the food pyramid approach to, but added the exercise in knowingly to blunt the effect of that lean muscle mass loss. Remember, they added that 5 days of 30-minute walking plus 2 days of resistance training. That group lost one extra pound on average, so around 15 pounds, not really that significant, but they only lost 25% lean muscle or lean mass. So not great, but they did spare a little more lean muscle by adding in exercise. The third group, which was the higher protein, lower carb, and no exercise, lost more weight. So now we're looking at an average of 17 and a half to 18 pounds. And weight loss, like the previous one, group two, was only 25% lean tissue. So they got more weight loss than either two of the food pyramid groups, plus the benefit of sparing lean muscle or lean mass without any additional exercise, any exercise, period. And finally, the fourth group, high protein plus the exercise, lost 23 pounds on average, twice as much as that first group with the food pyramid, with essentially 100% from body fat. Lean muscle loss was only 6%. So, gosh, why am I nerding out on this? When it comes to weight loss, it's important to remember that we need to focus on the quality of the weight loss. If we aren't eating enough protein and we aren't using resistance training, a lot of the weight we lose is from that lean muscle mass. Last week, I quoted another study that showed for every 10 pounds participants lost from doing cardio without any resistance training, 4 to 5 pounds of that 10 pounds came from lean muscle. Especially if you lost weight fast, a decent amount is coming from lean muscle. And the older we get, the harder it is to build and protect that lean muscle. And that lean muscle is so critical, not just to our body comp, which is great, and to our metabolism, which is huge, but as we age, it's so important for our immune system, for our adrenals, for our hormonal health. There's so many things that it protects. So please, 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 even if you're not looking to lose weight, get thee to a strength training program. Maintain that lean muscle mass. I'm including a link to my free beginner's guide to exercise in the show notes, so you can literally for free get started today in the comfort of your own home. And I just want to say, I am absolutely thrilled by this question. It is such a beautifully conscious question to ask in a society that just glorifies weight loss without question. The circumstances behind this particular question too. I'm not even going to go into this, but the point is that I'm just very impressed that it's so easy to get caught up in the noise and pat ourselves on the back. Like, we lost weight at no cost, or at all cost. And instead she's saying, I lost weight really fast and I recognize maybe there's something that I need to consider to keep my body healthy. I love it. I love it. Beautiful, beautiful. This topic is also why it's so deeply important to rely on metrics other than the scale when it comes to when we're looking to lose body fat, especially if you're new to exercise. The development of muscle mass can appear on the scale sometimes as stagnation and sometimes even gain. I mentioned at the top of this, just went in for my physical and I'm the heaviest I've ever been. I'm also at the best body comp I've been in a very long time, actually ever. So according to the scale, I have a 23.5 BMI, which is 1.5 below obese. But according to my lean muscle mass percentage and the body markers, biomarkers from my blood draws, I'm healthy AF. So scale is just a very small, kind of insignificant part of when we're looking at health tracking. And in terms of getting back on track, because apparently this one just lights me up, in terms of what kind of strength training to do, to get specific with her question, she asked me if Pilates would be okay. And my answer to her, we've known each other for a long time, as a person who has never done fitness before slash in the past, has been very open and teasing about how she's never going to start lifting weights because she thinks it's the most boring thing on earth, which I say, please let me show you differently. But hey, to each their own. My answer specifically to her was similar to what I said in the last question about how to get started again. I told her, if you're willing to consistently show up for Pilates and can start building a habit around fitting exercise into your life, aka if you don't dread going and hate every second, heck yeah, it's a great place to start, especially at the beginning. Because body weight, again, because she's coming from never having really worked out in her life, body weight's going to be enough to start stimulating muscle response. And Pilates is a supremely solid practice to build mind-body connection, to get really down and dirty with specificity, and to start nailing form foundational movements. I adore Pilates. It might not be the most ideal way to build and maintain lean muscle mass, but it is a great way to activate your core, to build that mind-body connection. Like I said, it has a lot of other real big benefits. I did tell her, however, as a woman in perimenopause, down the road, she would benefit. I'm never going to tell anyone need your body, your rules, but would definitely benefit the most from adding in strength training. At a certain point, the body does need the stimulus to build and maintain and sustain, or build and sustain lean muscle mass. We just, at a certain point, need to start adding external load. I don't ever want her to stop Pilates if she loves it. Like I said, it's got crazy benefits of its own. Pilates body, okay, all day. But as we age, our number one priority is muscle growth and protection and strength and power. It's just we need to put those, not, oh, I'm so sorry. I literally just said I wasn't going to say need. I highly recommend from the bottom of my heart putting our energy and focus there. But for today, for making exercise a no-brainer in this case, Pilates is magic. But as my general response, like I said, strength training is the key to healthy, sustainable bodies and weight loss. But bodies, because my friends, it's the key to healthy, sustainable overall wellness. Can I get a yee-haw? All right, my beautiful humans, a big, big thank you to everyone who wrote in these questions. This was so fun. And obviously, I got a little heated. I wore a sweatshirt recording this, and I don't think I can do that again because I get a little schwitzy when I get amped up. And talking about keeping you healthy is, it gets me toasty. Anywho, good to know. As always, if you have your own questions or ideas for topics to cover on this podcast, please drop me a line at kinsey@raiderfitacademy.com. It's been a weird one today, y'all. I am so here for you. That's the point. And I'm so stinking grateful to you for taking the time to listen, especially today. We did do a little bit longer episode. Like I said, all these questions were so good, such good questions. They all could have had their own episode. So thank you especially for hanging in for this longer mega episode. And please take care of your amazing bodies. And because this pod went a little bit longer than usual, I'm going to save reading an amazing listener's review for next episode, but I cannot tell you how much it means to me for those of you out there taking the time to leave reviews and 5-star ratings. My goal for this little pod at the end of the day is to be a free resource so that women all over the everywhere can get free information on how to take care of their beautiful bodies and age with absolute vitality without having any sort of barrier to entrance. All they need is something to listen to a podcast on. And I know that in itself is a barrier to entrance, but taking all the other ones out of the way, knowledge is power, and you all deserve to live vibrantly to your very last day. Until next time, Raiders. Ah, woo!